This is Hayden Bosworth. It's my great pleasure to introduce my colleague, Leah Zolik. She's been in the VA for over 12 years now and received her PhD in 2013 at UNC in health policy and management. And we're fortunate to have her now with us here at the VA and also within Duke, where she has a joint appointment with the Department of Medicine and now the new Department of Population Health Science that we're creating. I can go through all her awards and recognition, but she's been one of the most productive investigators we've had here at the Durham VA over the years with over 80 publications. But more importantly, she's just a wonderful person and a wonderful person to collaborate with. And so as you hear her present and hear what she's able to, her expertise, I hope you find the opportunity down the road to think about collaborating with her, because she's just one of those unique individuals that it's really a wonderful opportunity to work with her. So with that, I look forward to hearing Leah, and it's your show, Leah.
Thank you for that really lovely and humbling introduction, and thanks to Rob, too, for starting Hayden and I off on the right foot. I'm delighted to join you all today and to share a little bit about our work in the areas of cancer survivorship and cardiovascular disease. I know that many of you all are probably familiar with some of the yellow ribbons that we see honoring our veterans and the pink ribbons that we see for breast cancer awareness. I think colorectal cancer sometimes gets a little bit less attention in our media, so I just wanted to draw your attention to that blue ribbon with the star on the top right of this slide, and that's for colorectal cancer awareness and survivorship. So when March comes around honoring colorectal cancer survivors, please keep this ribbon in mind. As Rob and Hayden both mentioned, this work is supported by a VA Career Development Award, which is listed here. And I am most appreciative of the support staff of my Career Development Award, notably Hayden Bosworth, who's my primary mentor, as well as the other mentors on my mentoring team, collaborators, and project staff. I think you'll see that this has truly been a team effort. So to help us tailor our content and delivery today, it would really be great to get a sense of who is joining us on the call. So Rob is going to guide us through a quick poll.
Making a major statement about. Thank you, Leah. And the poll is up. The question being, which best describes your interest in VA cancer survivorship? And you can check all that apply. Choices are, this is my clinical interest, this is my research interest, I'm a cancer survivor, and this is a new topic to me. Leah, answers are streaming in. We have about 70%. We're going to let things roll for a few more moments. And things have leveled off, so I'm going to go ahead and close the poll and share out results. And what we have, what we have is percent answered, this is my clinical interest. 41% answered, this is my research interest. 12% answer, I'm a cancer survivor. And 40% say this is a new topic for me. Back to you.
Hey, that's really helpful. So it sounds like we have a mix of interest and expertise on the phone, and that's terrific. So today we're going to really divide the presentation into three sections. For the folks that this is new material to, we'll present an overview of the landscape of VA cancer care. And to do that, I'll share some results with you from a recently published cross-sectional description of cancer incidence among veterans who are receiving cancer care in the VA nationally. Then we'll discuss two research projects, and that will be geared more toward the people who are interested in cancer research. The first study is going to be a national retrospective case control study describing cardiovascular disease risk factors among colorectal cancer survivors. And then the second we'll touch a little more briefly, and that's a qualitative study where we interviewed individual colorectal cancer survivors, and we really asked them about their experiences with transitions in care from specialty care back to primary care, and perceptions of chronic disease management with particular emphasis on cardiovascular disease. So with that, we'll get started by talking a little bit about cancer incidence in the VA. And to frame our discussion, we thought it might be helpful to discuss the general composition of cancer in the VA. The VA Central Cancer Registry is our primary data source for this particular analysis. The VA Central Cancer Registry contains information for veterans who are diagnosed with or treated for cancer at any VA medical center nationwide. Each year, about 50,000 veterans are newly diagnosed with cancer in the VA healthcare system. So we're actually the largest integrated provider of cancer care in the U.S. And while women veterans we know are the largest growing population of VA healthcare system users, we still see that the majority of people diagnosed with cancer are men. In fact, about 97% of cancers that are treated in the VA are diagnosed among men. So this data, as I mentioned, is from a recently published report that's describing cancers that were newly diagnosed among veterans who received some portion of their cancer care in the VA in the year 2010. And this shows the ranking of commonly diagnosed cancers by gender. These rankings are generally comparable to what we see in the U.S. general population. You'll note on the left side of the screen that among veteran men who are using the VA, the most commonly diagnosed cancer is prostate, and that counts for about 30% of cancers among men, followed by lung and then colorectal. And the story is similar among women veterans. So we see that breast cancer is the most commonly diagnosed, accounting for about 30% of cancers among women, also followed by lung and colorectal cancers. Now, we know that the veteran population lives unevenly distributed across the U.S. So this map is not adjusted for the population density of veterans who are living in certain places. This is simply descriptive, and it's describing where veterans who are newly diagnosed with cancer are accessing the VA healthcare system. So the zip codes that have the darkest shade of blue are areas that have veterans with a higher density of cancer. And the zip codes with lighter green have the fewest. And our idea really here is just to convey that we serve veterans with cancer who are living throughout the country as a whole. And many of our veterans we know live in areas that are quite rural. And like most programs in the VA, when we think about developing programs to support our cancer survivors, we need to really keep this in mind and think about how we can make things accessible for veterans who may not be living near a large academic medical center affiliated VA. So on this slide, you can see the stage of diagnosis reported as a percent of total cancer cases for the most common diagnosed cancers in 2010. And the white box on the left is for cancers who are diagnosed at stage one disease, so the earliest stage. And next we have the light blue box is stage two, and then so on moving to the right. I'd like to point out that the darkest blue on the far right is for cancers without a stage. And this could be either because data was missing or because the stage was unknown or not applicable, was recorded in the registry. So thinking really just about colorectal cancer, on the top row, you'll see that approximately 53% of cancers were diagnosed with early stage, either stage one or two disease. And I think this is really a testament to the VA's robust colorectal cancer screening initiatives. The VA has done an excellent job of rolling out things like colonoscopy, FOBT, and other screening tests. In another analysis, we dug deeper into some statistics that are relevant for colorectal cancer. And we chose colorectal cancer specifically for several reasons. First, as we've already shown, it's the third most commonly diagnosed cancer among both men and women veterans. And that's also true of men and women in the general U.S. population. Colorectal cancer is also the third most commonly cause of cancer-related death among both men and women. The good news, though, about colorectal cancer is that, as I mentioned earlier, we have very effective screening programs. And when detected early, colorectal cancer is highly survivable. The American Cancer Society reports that about 92% of patients who are diagnosed with stage one disease survive at least 5 years or longer. So in our analysis of colorectal cancer in the VA, we were only able to look at 3-year all-cause mortality. And in this analysis, not surprisingly, we found that there was a significant association between age diagnosis and survival. So the older you were, the more likely you were to have a short survival time. And we found that patients with localized disease, which includes patients with stage one as well as some stage two cancers, survival was just over 82%. So again, this is a very highly survivable disease when identified and treated early. So we've established that colorectal cancer is common in both men and women veterans, and that it's highly survivable. And as a result of this, there are an estimated 750,000 people living with colorectal cancer in the U.S. today. So this issue of cancer survivorship broadly and colorectal cancer survivorship specifically are increasing concerns for healthcare delivery systems across the country, including the VA. And so with that, I'll go to our second poll question. And realizing that the whole title of this talk is rather leading, please take a moment to respond to our poll. And if you could tell us what you think the leading cause of death is for colorectal cancer survivors who are about 8 years after their colorectal cancer diagnosis. And for this one, we ask that you only select one response.
To slow the effect of opioid withdrawal. The poll is up. We have about 50% given their answer so far. The FDA said it carries similar risks of abuse, addiction, and sometimes death as opioids themselves, and is often used by addicts to get high. Drug Enforcement Administration has put off plans to classify crazy. And the answers have just about leveled off, so I'm going to go ahead and close the poll and share out the answers. Leah, 15% answered colorectal cancer recurrence, 10% answered secondary cancer diagnosis, 70% answered cardiovascular disease, and 5% answered motor vehicle accident. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Rob. So it sounds like you all are a very knowledgeable crowd. So there was a longitudinal study that was recently completed by Aaron Lewis at the City of Hope, and that group found that colorectal cancer-related deaths really plateaued in the first 5 years after diagnosis. And at the 8-year mark post-diagnosis, cardiovascular disease outpaces colorectal cancer as the leading cause of death among these survivors. And at the 10-year mark, secondary cancer primaries and neurological problems are the most common causes of disease, but very reassuringly, the patterns of a new cancer diagnosis are very similar to what we see in the general non-cancer population. So for the folks who answered cancer recurrence in the short term and cardiovascular disease in the long term, that's absolutely right. And this is a figure that my CVA team and I have developed or are developing. And this is really to convey that the risk of developing colorectal cancer or cardiovascular disease and the association between those two are somewhat complex. So there are specific risks to developing colorectal cancer, including genetic conditions such as Lynch syndrome, familial polyp disorders, and so on. And these kinds of things are denoted in the blue on the left side of this slide. There are also some specific risks to developing cardiovascular disease depicted in red, including things like family history of high cholesterol, among others. And then in purple, we see these shared risk factors between colorectal cancer and cardiovascular disease. These are largely modifiable behavioral risk factors, such as poor quality diet that's low in fiber, physical inactivity, particularly sedentary time and TV watching. So for certain colorectal cancer treatments, there can also be a transient impact on cardiovascular disease risk. So, for example, bevacizumab is a chemotherapy agent that's used to treat metastatic disease, stage 4 disease, and exposure to bevacizumab has a short-term impact on blood pressure or hypertension, which we all know is a cardiovascular disease risk factor. So, in short, this is a complex association between colorectal cancer and cardiovascular disease. But the major drivers of this association are modifiable behavioral risks. So to better understand this association, we used National VA Central Cancer Registry and VA administrative data sources to compare VA colorectal cancer survivors with matched controls who had no history of cancer, and our goal was to accomplish these two objectives. So first, we wanted to determine the odds of colorectal cancer survivors being diagnosed with cardiovascular-related chronic conditions. And these specifically included hypertension, hyperlipidemia, and diabetes. And second, we wanted to determine their likelihood of controlling these chronic conditions. So we looked at all of these outcomes among patients with stages 1 through 3 colorectal cancer over the 12 months following their diagnosis with colorectal cancer. So this is a retrospective matched case control study, and we identified colorectal cancer survivors using the VA Central Cancer Registry. and identifies patients who were diagnosed at any VA medical center nationwide from fiscal years 2009 to 2012. And to be eligible for this study, patients had to be newly diagnosed with stage 1 through 3 disease. They also had to have at least one primary care or oncology visit in the year prior to their colorectal cancer diagnosis. And the objective of that limitation was that we were trying to target people that were actively using the VA for their health care. Patients were excluded if we were unable to link their record with VA administrative data or if we couldn't find an appropriately matched control, and that impacted very few patients. I'll show you a diagram in a moment. To match colorectal cancer survivors and non-cancer control patients, we used sequential stratification exact matching, and this technique allowed us to have multiple anchor dates and time-varying characteristics. So, for example, a patient's weight and BMI could have varied over time, and we anticipated that these time-varying characteristics could impact patients' healthcare use and diagnosis. So, for example, that a patient who had more frequent interactions with the VA might have had more opportunities to be diagnosed with hypertension. So properly adjusting for their healthcare use was really critical to this analysis. So in order to have the best possible match to the colorectal cancer survivors, potential non-cancer controls had to have no history of cancer from 5 years prior until the matched colorectal cancer survivor's diagnosis date, and they needed to have at least one or more primary care visits in the previous 6 months. Now, you can see the variables that we used for that sequential stratification exact matching here. These included sex, race, age within a 5-year interval, copayment status, VISN, distance to healthcare, and healthcare use. And we dichotomized healthcare use at less than or up to 3 visits versus more than 3 outpatient visits in the pre-period. And in the next step, we matched cases and controls on categorical BMI and on pre-existing diagnoses of cardiovascular-related chronic conditions. For these chronic conditions, we also looked back between 2 and 26 months prior to the colorectal cancer diagnosis. And after exact matching on these characteristics, we further refined the selection using the Mihalanovis distance function for continuous variables of age and distance to VA healthcare. And this really enabled us to get the smallest variance while simultaneously limiting the loss of potential controls. And we were able to get up to 3 matches per colorectal cancer survivor using this technique. Now, the 3 primary outcomes of interest were dichotomous measures of diagnosis of hypertension, diabetes, and/or hyperlipidemia in the year that was following the colorectal cancer diagnosis. For the matched non-cancer controls, that would be the anchored primary care visit date that was matched with the colorectal cancer diagnosis. And the 3 secondary outcomes of interest were time-varying binary indicators of cardiovascular disease-related chronic disease control based on clinical practice guidelines that covered this study period. These were blood pressure, so different guidelines for non-diabetic and diabetic patients, which you can see here, of 140 over 90 millimeters of mercury, or 140 over 90. Diabetes with a cutoff of hemoglobin A1C of 7, and high cholesterol with an LDL with an optimal cutoff of 100 milligrams per deciliter. And these disease control measures were based on electronic health record data that was measured in outpatient clinics in the year following the diagnosis or the matched anchor date. And we used logistic regression to examine the primary outcomes. We used generalized linear mixed models with an individual level random intercept to examine the secondary outcomes. Now, this is a very simplified version of the consort diagram, really just to give you a general sense of the steps that we used for cohort construction. So you can see that we identified over 15,000 colorectal cancer cases in the VA Central Cancer Registry. And these are people who met the initial eligibility criteria. We also identified over 54 million potential controls who had no history of cancer based on the VA administrative data. And after applying eligibility and matching criteria, which again are very simplified on this slide, Our study sample ended up with just under 10,000 matched colorectal cancer survivors and nearly 30,000 matched non-cancer controls, and this really comprised our analytic cohort. So describing the pre-existing cardiovascular disease-related chronic conditions at the time of diagnosis among colorectal cancer survivors, about 37% of our colorectal cancer survivors had an existing diabetes diagnosis. Just over half, 52%, had high cholesterol recorded, and 69% had an existing hypertension diagnosis. And then remember that we matched the non-cancer cases, sorry, controls, to reflect these proportions. Looking at our cohort characteristics for the matched group, as you can see here, the majority of the cohort was comprised of white men, approximately half of whom were married at the time of diagnosis. We used copayment status as a proxy measure for annual income. Most patients reported either reduced copay because of low income or disability. And it's worth noting that for veterans who don't have to pay a copay because of a disability, they may not undergo the robust income screening. So this is really an imperfect proxy measure for income. Slightly more patients lived in the Southeast, which we think is really just reflective of the general distribution of the VA patient population. Nothing notably unique about their cancer per se. And approximately a third of patients were obese with a body mass index above 30. The mean age at colorectal cancer diagnosis was about 67 years. And patients lived an average of 12.5 miles from their nearest VA healthcare facility. And they had an average of between 3 and 4 primary care visits in the year prior to diagnosis. And remember that we allowed for a buffer period in the months prior to diagnosis, so any additional healthcare use associated with getting the colorectal cancer diagnosis should essentially be controlled out by that buffer period. Now, moving into more of the model results, if you'll look at the text on the x-axis in the bold orange print, in the year following the anchor date, compared to matched non-cancer controls, colorectal cancer survivors had about 57% higher odds of being diagnosed with hypertension, and this includes all diagnoses of hypertension in this sample. This is not limited to new diagnoses. Also, in the year post-anchor date, we identified no difference, or no statistically significant difference, between colorectal cancer survivors and controls regarding diabetes diagnosis. And again, compared to matched non-cancer control patients, colorectal cancer survivors had about half the odds, actually, of being diagnosed with high cholesterol. Now, on this slide, you'll notice again that the control outcomes are in orange print. So 12 months post-anchor date, colorectal cancer cases experienced 12% higher odds of poor blood pressure control and cholesterol control compared to matched non-cancer controls. And there was no significant difference between diabetic colorectal cancer cases and diabetic to match controls in their odds of achieving hemoglobin A1C control at that 12-month mark. Given the difference in blood pressure, we conducted a post-hoc analysis to evaluate differences in polypharmacy and antihypertensive medication taking behaviors. Our goal here was to assess adherence to antihypertensive medications, and so we calculated a medication possession ratio, also known as an MPR. MPR is a pharmacy refill-based measure of medication adherence, and we specifically looked at patients who are prescribed metoprolol tartrate in the outpatient setting, and we chose that drug because it was the most commonly prescribed antihypertensive among both colorectal cancer survivors and the matched controls. So regarding polypharmacy, which we know is a risk factor for adherence problems, colorectal cancer survivors and matched non-cancer controls were prescribed similar numbers of overall oral medications, and that was approximately 4 medications a day. And based on pharmacy refill data, adherence was significantly lower among colorectal cancer survivors compared to matched non-cancer controls. refills for their antihypertensives only about 85% of the time, compared with 93% of the time for cases. And it's worth noting that this was statistically significant. So in terms of our next steps, we think this analysis suggests that compared to matched peers, colorectal cancer survivors may be more likely to be diagnosed with hypertension, and they could be somewhat more likely to struggle with blood pressure control in the first year following their cancer diagnosis. And while the magnitude of these effects is relatively small, again, about 12% higher odds of having poor blood pressure control, we assert that this is still an important difference, particularly when we consider it scaled up for a population health perspective. And it's important to note that we don't think these differences between cases and controls are a result of cancer treatment. So I mentioned that certain chemotherapy drugs, like bevacizumab, could have a transient impact on blood pressure control. This is a drug that's used for the treatment of metastatic disease, and our analysis was limited to patients with stage 1 through 3 disease. But we were still concerned that some patients might have been prescribed bevacizumab to control disease progression. So we reviewed VA administrative health data, and we found that out of about 15,000 or 13,000 other cases, only 7 colorectal cancer survivors in the cohort and 11 controls were exposed to bevacizumab during this time frame of 1 year post-diagnosis date. So these are really small numbers and suggest that bevacizumab exposure is not a driver of our results. So we really do think that these are because of shared behavioral risk factors. As a next step, we would like to evaluate medication adherence to statins and other chronic medications to see if this pattern holds for those as well. There has been some emerging evidence, particularly in the breast cancer survivorship literature, suggesting that adherence with medications for chronic diseases might fall over time. So a study by Yang et al. Used market scan data to look at adherence for medications for hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes, osteoporosis, and other chronic conditions. And they found that average adherence to these medications was over 91% before receiving a breast cancer diagnosis, but it fell to just under 78% after cancer treatment. So we think that as a next step, there really may be a need for interventions to improve cardiovascular behavioral risk factors, particularly medication adherence among VA colorectal cancer survivors. So moving forward, we really wanted to better understand the experiences that colorectal cancer survivors were having around their transition from active treatment to survivorship care, and also to understand their perceptions of chronic disease management. So this was a very robust qualitative study that was also part of my career development award. And in the interest of time, I won't go through the methods in their entirety, but I would like to let you know that we interviewed colorectal cancer survivors who used a VA medical center in either North Carolina or Virginia for some portion of their cancer treatment. And we recruited 25 participants who had stage 1 through 3 disease. On average, these folks were about 4 years post-diagnosis, and they ranged between 1 and 9 years post-diagnosis. So these are mid to long-term cancer survivors, I would say. So we'll take a moment for a poll again, and remembering that this is a small sample size that may not be broadly generalizable, I wonder, what do you think survivors reported during these interviews as a significant health concern? And Rob will help us, but you're welcome to choose multiple responses.
Leah, I think I did not set this one up as multiple responses.
That's okay. Choose your favorite.
Well, people are choosing favorites, and we'll let that go. We got about 50% in so far. And I apologize for that. I guess I just didn't catch it in your slides.
No problem.
Okay, things have leveled off, so I'm going to go ahead and close the poll. And in terms of answers, 44% of respondents chose monitoring for colorectal cancer recurrence is what they think colorectal cancer survivors reported as significant health concerns. 24% their heart health, 24% again changes in their daily routines, and 8% understanding their medications. Next you.
That's great. And all of these answers are accurate. So survivors really reported that all of these things are important to them. And I think we can see that given the distribution of our responses as well. Most folks mentioned that they had found a new normal with regard to their daily routine. We see that played out with other serious illnesses as well. But several participants really focused in on their heart health. So again, in the interest of time, I won't share the full qualitative study with you, but I would like to highlight just a few key quotes. So many colorectal cancer survivors reported that their focus had shifted from surviving cancer to managing chronic conditions. And some survivors even reported that their most significant health priority was their heart health. So as an example, a man with stage one colon cancer reported, "My biggest health problem is my heart. I figure if I take care of my heart, I'll be around a whole lot longer." Later in the interview, this same gentleman said, "I was careful for about a year, and then it just all went to pieces. When I started back at the VA, I had talks with the doctors. Then I started changing my living habits drastically." And this is an idea that we heard pretty commonly expressed, that there was something really important about engaging with primary care. Even though most veterans had engaged somewhat with primary care throughout their cancer treatment, when primary care took over their routine care again, they really started to focus back on their heart health or their cardiovascular health. Colorectal cancer survivors also reported that their perspective on medication use had changed over the course of their cancer journey. Survivors now reported that taking medications as it was prescribed by their providers became more important to them, whereas before they had really seen it as just more of a nuisance. So a man with stage 3 colon cancer said, "Now I'm taking the medications I'm supposed to, nothing to do with the cancer, just the heart stuff." And this was interesting given that this gentleman was stage 3. This was an idea that we saw more commonly expressed with earlier stage cancers, that while they did have some ongoing surveillance required for their colorectal cancer, really the day-to-day burden was on managing their chronic medications and conditions. And similarly, a man with stage 1 colon cancer reported, "I used to have to take medications, and I wouldn't take them like I was supposed to, but now I make sure that I do." So this is really just an increasing interest and awareness of the importance of medication adherence. Survivors also reported that their medication needs had changed after the cancer treatment. We saw a lot of variation in body mass index over time, and it's possible that this was associated with some of these changes. So an example quote is presented here. "I take insulin every night. When you take chemo, you know, your blood sugar automatically shoots up. After the treatment, my sugar levels are different. I was just taking pills for my sugar diabetes. Now I'm taking 30 units of insulin every night, and I hope it doesn't get worse. It's all different." So we have this feeling of uncertainty in managing medications and chronic illnesses often expressed. And despite the uniqueness of the cancer experience in motivating better medication adherence, colorectal cancer survivors really reported barriers that we see in the general population. That was quite similar. So these included problems with polypharmacy, taking multiple medications daily, scheduling, difficulty taking medications at specific times of day. Survivors also mentioned things like forgetfulness, lacking social support with taking their medications, being worried about taking medications for the rest of their life, and particularly struggling with depression. Depression, we know, is fairly common among cancer survivors. So this suggests that it may be possible to tailor existing chronic disease medication adherence interventions and tailor them to address the specific needs of cancer survivors. So we thought that it might be helpful to see the full trajectory of our research agenda. Our previous work really focused on ensuring cancer care quality during a period of diagnosis and treatment. So these are three landmark VA studies: EPRP, the External Peer Review Program, CCQMS, which is the Cancer Care Quality Monitoring System, and CanCORS, which is a large both VA and non-VA study, all of these targeting the improvement of colorectal cancer care quality, mostly during treatment, a little bit during the diagnosis process as well. And then today we've given you an overview of my Career Development Award, which is really rooted in the experience of cancer survivorship. And I've presented a portion of the data from the first two aims of that Career Development Award. During my Career Development Award period, I've also had the opportunity to conduct several internally funded pilot studies to improve the content and delivery of survivorship care plans, as well as to identify and implement routine collection of patient-reported outcomes in an electronic health record, and to implement a geriatric oncology assessment to better understand patients' needs before they undergo treatment. And the goal with that study was really to address the needs, as I said, before patients undergo treatment so that they have a better chance of success with adhering to their cancer treatment and they have a stronger footing as they move into survivorship care. We've also recently had an NIH R21 funded to investigate disparities in cardiovascular disease care among prostate cancer survivors. So the issues for prostate cancer and colorectal cancer are very similar, and as you remember from the earlier part of the presentation, prostate cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer in the VA as a whole, and certainly among veteran men. So our proposed next step is to submit an IIR, an investigator-initiated review, focusing on medication adherence and cardiovascular care among colorectal cancer and other survivors in the VA. Largely colorectal and prostate. And we think that some of the work that's presented here today will be good preliminary evidence for that IIR. And so with that, perhaps we could take questions.
Thank you, Dr. Zulik, for that incredibly important and interesting presentation. We do have a couple of questions pending. Perhaps while we wait for more questions to come in, this might be a good opportunity for Hayden to say a few words if he has anything he wants to contribute at this time. Hayden, are you there? Okay, well, maybe he's muted. I'll just ask the first question, Leah. And audience members, if you have any questions, you can go ahead and use the question pane in the GoToWebinar dashboard. Just click on the little triangle to the left of the word questions, and it will open up the whole pane, and you can type your questions in there. So the first pending question is, this refers to slide number 9, is age really 0 to 49 or 18 to 49 or similar?
That's an excellent question. It's really about 20 to 49. We did have quite a few patients who were on the bubble, and we used that 0 to 49 bracket to most closely mirror what's reported in SEER, which is kind of the most the comparable report of cancer incidence in the VA. I'm sorry, in the U.S. So we were trying to follow the age brackets of SEER, which does include some folks who were diagnosed with cancer younger. We don't really see that in our patient population in the VA. So we didn't include a lower limit for the analysis, but I believe the youngest person was around 20. That's an excellent question.
Great, thank you. One more came in while you were answering that. Do you think cancer survivor depression is different among vets and non-vets?
That's a great question. I haven't personally done much work in that area, but my impression from interacting informally with veterans is that it may be a little bit different. I think, you know, we all know that post-traumatic stress disorder is a major issue for some of our veterans. In the broader literature around cancer, we see that many cancer patients also experience PTSD related to their cancer diagnosis and treatment. So I suspect that there may be an interaction for many of our veterans who could have an exacerbation of existing depression or PTSD compounded now with new PTSD from that cancer experience. So, yes, I do think that it may be a bit different for our veterans.
Thank you. Another question. Cardiovascular health issues are key in an older cohort. Do you expect the younger vets will also suffer from cardiovascular issues in the next decade?
That's a great question. I do. I think that the participant is absolutely correct that this is largely an issue of older people. We know that the average age of diagnosis is about 67, which, you know, as folks continue to survive 10 years and longer from their diagnosis, they have plenty of time to go on to develop cardiovascular disease. For our younger veterans, I think that we're still seeing some of these behavioral risk factors, like sedentary behavior, poor diet, smoking. So while it may take a period of years for those risk factors to catch up with them, I think this is certainly something that we need to keep our eye on in the short run. Absolutely.
Great. Thank you. Another person writes in, I'm sorry if I missed this earlier, but does your research indicate that cardiovascular risk factors may be indicative of risk for CRC, colorectal cancer?
Right, that's a great question. So we haven't done that kind of causal analysis in our work. There are a group of investigators based out of Australia who have done a series of studies called Can Change, the CAN being for cancer and, you know, the change being for change. So they've done a series of interventional studies. Although they did do a little bit of preliminary kind of epidemiology type studies in preparation for that intervention. And their work does suggest that there is, you know, some sort of causal relationship between these two, although the mechanisms of action are not clear. So hopefully that's helpful. I think that in the work that we're doing, it really does seem to be about shared behavioral risk. We know that for many cancers, like breast cancer, the treatments can be cardiotoxic, leading to things like congestive heart failure. That's not something that we see so much in the colorectal cancer arena. So thankfully, we have treatments that are not hurting the heart, but we do see these shared behavioral risk factors as being really critical to address.
Somebody else is asking if you could please define shared behavioral risk.
Oh, that's a great question, and I apologize. I should have done that. So when we think about behavioral risk factors, we really mean things that we can change and things that are in our influence as individuals to make a decision about how we live our daily lives. So a behavioral risk factor could be something like smoking or hopefully stopping smoking, things like not moving or engaging in regular physical activity, things like eating a healthy diet with fruits and vegetables. So these are health behaviors that we as individuals have the ability to make decisions about, and therefore they're changeable. In contrast, we could also have genetic factors, which we do have independently for both colorectal cancer and cardiovascular disease, and these would be, you know, things that we had inherited from our families, which we may or may not have much control over. So there may be some sort of early screening process that we can undergo, as is the case for Lynch syndrome, for example. Patients who have Lynch syndrome are more likely to develop colorectal cancer at some point in their life. But for these shared behavioral risk factors, these are really, you know, activities that we're engaging in on a daily basis that have the potential to impact both development of colorectal cancer and development of cardiovascular disease separately.
Great. Thank you. That's all we have for pending questions at this time. Audience members, if you have been holding off, now is your chance. Just use that questions pane. But Dr. Zulig, perhaps at this time, if you have any closing comments or anything that either one of you would like to submit, now might be a good time for that.
Absolutely. I would say we are very fortunate in the VA that we have a large population of veterans who have a former diagnosis of cancer who have survived to work with. My experience is that this group is very engaged and happy to connect with both clinicians and researchers. And we have a wide array of data sets. So I think the time is right, and it's an exciting time to work in VA cancer research and health services research in general. And if anyone has additional questions, I would welcome them through email. I don't know, Hayden, if you perhaps have any remarks as well.
I think we may have lost Hayden.
I'm still here.
Oh, yes.
You haven't lost me. No, I think this is, I'm one of your biggest fans, so I think that this area of oncology, cardiovascular disease, is a growing and important area. Survivorship continues to grow, and so understanding the context and the issues regarding adherence and health behaviors are crucial. So this work, I think, as Leah presented with her, where she's going, is really important to understand where the field is going to be moving in the next couple of years as things continue.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dr. Zulig and Dr. Bosworth, for preparing and presenting today. Audience members, when I close the session, please stick around for a few moments and do fill out that survey. We rely on your answers to continue to bring high-quality cyber seminars. And once again, thank you, Dr. Zulig, for this interesting and very important, in my opinion, research.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks. Have a good day.